Tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi This is the last observance day of the retreat time. There's a full moon. After the Patimokkha was talking with the monastics and in contemplating beginning and endings, it's a Is this the end of the retreat, or is this the beginning of a new phase of our practice? I'm thinking, just considering like beginnings and endings. How we relate to them, how we react to them. We're reflecting on that, and particularly going in to see Mary. Coming to the end of her life, how we measure it. Is it an ending or is it a beginning? Which ones? And which is the what? What do we prefer? What do we fear? What do we desire, or what are we worried about? How do we hold it? What value do we put on it? What do we read into it? Like today being the first really warm day. And do we look at it with gladness or saying, oh, it's the end of winter? Or do we sort of, God, it's the beginning of summer. Isn't it terrible? Or do we, how do we hold it? What do we hold? It's like the story I've told many times with Ajahn Chah. It was one of the first teachings I actually understood of his, of somebody coming to him and asking for him to, you know, to explain Buddhism to them. So somebody, you know, quite sincere and not facetiously, but very sincerely asking, what is? I've been born a Buddhist, been born a Buddhist, but what the heck is this Buddhism anyway? Imagine child picking up some piece of wood nearby, lifting it up and sort of, you know, is it a big piece of wood or is it a little piece of wood? And the person, of course, gets really confused because they want to know about Buddhism, and he's asking about this piece of wood. Is it big or is it little? And then Ajahn Chah explains to him, you know, that's, you know, it depends on how we look at it and how we, you know, what our desires are. You know, if we wanted to build a house, we'd say, this is just a little piece of wood. It's not, you know, it's no good to me. If we wanted to pick our teeth, they'd say, well, that's a really big piece of wood. It's, yeah, it's not. So that, you know, we measure things by our desires. And oftentimes we don't actually recognize that that's what's functioning. We take the desire to be real, or the view, the perspective, opinion as solid and real and concrete. So that aren't able to sort of hold things in their possibilities, or we view everything according to our own perspective, our own fears, our own desires. So that, you know, we tend to suffer over things. And it's exactly in terms of a Buddhism. What Buddhism is a teaching to free us from suffering. So that to be able to sort of recognize this is just as it is, this piece of wood or this season or this life, it's just as it is, it's not big or little, it's not the beginning or the end, it's just sort of as it is. I mean, those are conventional ways of measuring things. They have a validity if we recognize what we're doing. You know, it's like with our life. Now, is it when the body starts packing in, illness is taking over, sort of degeneration of bodily functions are there. You know, is that, and conventionally that's the end of the life. You know, is that a bad thing or a good thing? Is it desired or undesired? So, I mean, some people might look on it and be just really looking forward to it. Other people are dreading it. But it's just as it is. And that's why the Buddha's teaching is prodding us to be looking at things in their conditionality, how things are conditioned. There are causes and conditions. There are certain set ways that things function. And to step back from the personal, it's always the personal that creates the values that we put on it, that adds the proliferations to it. I want it to be like this, I don't want it to be like that. It should be like this. It should never be like that. And those are things we add to it. And of course we completely spin out with it, and create enormous suffering and confusion. So that in our practice, we need to be attentive to beginnings and endings, and what we're, like this, the end of a retreat. Is this the end of the retreat that we've been waiting for, so we can finally get out of retreat and do what we want? No. Or is it the end of the retreat that one is dreading will happen, so that we'll have to start doing chores again, building kutis or clearing trails or whatever? All the proliferations. Or is it an opportunity for a beginning? Again, which either we read into with either trepidation or desire or a fixed view of how it should be. So all these different ways that we hold, but it's all, it's just as it is. Beginnings and endings are just as they are. It's just the ordinariness of of causal conditions. Whether those causal conditions are external things like universes and world systems, or whether it's just the our physical bodies, whether it's our minds. It's just sort of these causal conditions, what the Buddha called the Dhammata. Just according to Dhamma. Or Dhamma Cittata. Established on Dhamma, established on truth. Dhamma. Again, sort of this according to Dhamma. These are just the ordinariness and the normality of causes and conditions changing and just rolling on. And oftentimes we're, the sense of we don't step back and observe or allow it to unfold in its natural way. You know, we either resist it or fear it or try to manipulate it to accord to our wishes and desires. And of course that creates problems. So that our the path of wisdom is one of you know, reflecting and investigating and being open to this is the way it is. Or it's particularly when it's around around death, around just the life and death of either ourselves, our loved ones. We can go through all sorts of complicated proliferations, but in the end it just sort of it's as it is. There's a story in the Chinese tradition and in Chinese tradition you don't actually even use the word death. It's just taboo. It's really very, very bad form, and it's just not mentioned. It's really considered extraordinarily inauspicious, unfortunate, and extremely bad manners, and yeah, just really inauspicious to mention death. And there was a wealthy and powerful noble who heard about a great master who lived in another province who was considered to be had some sort of attainments, and one of the things that people would do, and especially if you were the more wealthy you were, more powerful you were, then you would go and get some kind of blessing, some personal blessing from some highly attained master, and these are like protection blessings and blessings to bring good fortune and well-being. And of course everybody wants well-being and happiness and strength, long life. It's like when we do our blessing chant after the meal, ayut wano sukang balang, to have long life, to have beauty, to have strength, to have happiness. Everybody wants that. But this master was considered to be very highly attained, and one of the things that he was noted for doing was, and in Chinese culture, then they say the writing of beautiful calligraphy in a poetic form was a very highly evolved art, and done very beautifully. Actually, Master Hua was extraordinarily good at that, doing spontaneous poetry and writing it in beautiful calligraphy. So this master was very similar. So this noble person went to him, and of course he goes with his retinue and sort of a bit pompous, and sort of explains what he'd like, and he wants this blessing that will sort of uplift him and protect him and bring good fortune on him and his family and the master sort of goes to his shrine room and with his calligraphy tools, and he meditates for quite some time, and then comes out of meditation, does this quick, very beautiful calligraphy, and brings the scroll out and shows it to this noble, wealthy nobleman, and he faints on the spot, and sort of gives out this scream of horror and faints on the spot, and they sort of revive him, and he's just really upset and angry. How could you do this to me? Because the master had written in this beautiful calligraph form was that father dies, child dies, grandchild dies. She said, "How could you do this to me? And you just cursed me for generations." But then the master said, "Well, hey, wait a minute. Let's think about this. Have you ever known anybody to not die?" And then have you ever known a father or mother who's alive, and then their children die, or their grandchild dies? That's tremendous suffering. So then walking him through it and saying, this is the best it gets. This is as good as it gets, just to be able to actually sort of come into the world and be a parent and to die before your children and grandchildren die. That's as good as it gets. And that's the ordinariness of the Dhamma. Say the ordinariness of nature, the ordinariness of the. And when one walks through it, that's actually the way it is. So that, by our desires, of course, one wants to, live for a long time, or one wants to have things in a certain way. And then if it doesn't go according to that, then we get very either upset, fearful, confused, disappointed, depressed. And that, of course, but that's our addition to it. That's what we add to it. But the ordinariness of the Dhamma, or the consistency of the way things are, is it's always that way. So in our practice, to be contemplating endings and contemplating beginnings, which is one sometimes, which is which. It's how we look at it, really. is the packing up of a body and life form that is completely untenable. Is that an end that is is really undesirable, or is that a beginning of something new? It's like spring. You know, you're thinking, you know, the seasons, and this is sort of, I was thinking of that, just going into the hospital, and sort of thinking of these days, and sort of seeing the, you know, the poppies coming out, and the streams running, and sort of things green, and weather getting warmer. Just seeing the kind of the these cycles of nature. And there, you know, whether, you know, we are here for them or not, the cycles of nature are that's an ongoing feature. The cycles of, you know, that is kind of this inexorable change for life and cycles to go through there. That just to, you know, to keep changing, or to keep fulfilling their cyclical nature. You know, there's a real sweetness to spring. One can appreciate it. But it's also, in terms of, as Mary was saying that today, you know, spring is sort of, it's a good time to die. And then she also said, well, maybe next spring. but it's to be said, oh yeah, it is. I think that too, and you know, sometimes appreciate these things. It's like, it isn't as if we can't appreciate something. It's like we have to reject it, you know, just because we have to be separated from it. You know, think of the in the. Account of the Buddha's last year of his life in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, where the Buddha and Ananda have gone to Vesali, and he's visited the communities there and the lay people, and he's given teachings, and then he's leaving to continue on his journey. And as he is leaving Vesali and is probably on a rise overlooking Vesali, turning back and just sort of looking back on Vesali and then saying to Ananda, you know, Vesali is just a really beautiful place, with its parks and its groves and its shrines, and it's a really lovely place. No. And then turning around and walking away. It's just, you know, this is the last time that I'll look on Vesali. And then he actually says, this is the last time I'll see Vesali. And it's just that, oh, it's, you know, very lovely. I think one is the humanness of the Buddha, sort of seeing, yeah, even a, you know, fully enlightened Buddha, I mean, that's enlightenment and being completely awakened doesn't sort of shut it out. It is really lovely, but it is still, it's the last time I'll see it. And not to not bemoaning the fact, it's just sort of stating a fact of nature. And to appreciate it. But then still to be able to walk away from it, not to create the ripples in the mind or proliferate around it in ways that just unsettle the mind, unsettle the heart. Again, that looking on it as is that dhammata, dhammatittata, dhammaniyamata, in accordance with dhamma, in accordance with these causes and conditions. You know, life is like this. The world is like this. Having a body and mind is like this. You know, in terms of our own practice, to really, you know, bring that inwards and to really reflect on that. You know, just in the present moment, you know, what are we adding? What are we worrying about? What are we desiring after? What are we fearing? You know, and I think it's in that whole realm of immediacy of, you know, using the contemplation of death and dying to cut through the stuff that we add, and to be able to just hold the present moment in a shine the light of awareness and truth on them. You know, do I really need, you know, it's like really questioning this. Do I really need to add this worry? Or do I really need to add this desire of how I would like, what I would like? Do I have to have this opinion? Or really just clearing the heart out, clearing the mind out. And again, using that contemplation of our death and dying, just sort of, and to really bring that up and say, you know, if this were my death approaching, you know, is this a valid assumption? Is this a useful consideration? Is this a proper way to use or utilize my awareness, consciousness, faculties of mind and heart? Really, really bringing the mind back, you know, using that immediacy of our death to cut through. So it's really important to say, to use these reflections and, you know, to see where we're adding things to say, to the way it is, to Dhamma, that are just cluttering up the picture and creating chaos and confusion and suffering. And it's interesting that when you do that, that the way it is, or just that dhammatittata, established in Dhamma, when one is established in Dhamma, that is enough. You don't have to either make the world into something other or else. You don't have to make your mind be something else. You don't have to force the heart to have any particular thought or perception. Just to be with things as they are is enough. I mean, that's enough to be. That is where our peace is. That's where real contentment is. Where real and real, say, unshakability. As long as one's trying to prop things up or trying to make things be a particular way, or again, like Ajahn, the illustration of Ajahn Chah, that sort of, it's big or little because of our desires, or, added on to, then there's a quality of agitation there. It's not unshakable. But when we're able to just be present with the way things are, one really intuits an unshakability there. This is where our security is. That's one of the images that are in the Theragata, that an arahant gives of the enlightened mind. It's like a mountain that is not moved by the winds. Whatever way the wind blows from, the mountain is not moving. It's unshakable. And I think that's a really lovely image. When we can be present for the whatever wind blows in terms of external conditions change, or even internal conditions of our mind, when we can see through the habits of the mind, it's just, that's my desire mind cranking it out again. Oh, that's my fear mind. Trying to get a bite going, trying to get something going. Just seeing that. One is in a place of unshakability. Doesn't mean nothing's happening. But there's one is grounded in Dhamma Titata, standing on the foundation of Dhamma. So that to keep bringing this practice inwards, the things that we experience around us, and really draw it in internally, bring it into the heart, so that you're able to say experience this Dhamma for yourself. I mean, that's what the Buddha is encouraging us all to do. But if he gives us the directions, it's up to us to do the practice and see for ourselves. So that this is whether we're in a period of retreat, or whether it's sort of the retreat ends, that's still our duty, or our opportunity, is to realize this this Dhamma, this truth. I'll offer that for reflection this evening.